I'm Anna Garcia with True Crime News, the podcast. Every crime tells a story. Every story demands justice. True Crime News, the podcast, covers breaking crimes, investigating high-profile and under-the-radar cases. Every week, we dive beyond the headlines, exploring the effects of violent crimes on victims and search for justice. We hope you join us as your weekly source for True Crime News. Listen to and follow True Crime News, the podcast, on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
KNX News, 97.1 FM.
This is Countdown 2024.
Brought to you by LMU Loyola Law School.
Here are Charles Feldman and Margaret Carrero.
Well, it seems like a really long time, but just 40 days left until the Trump transition takes place. On today's Countdown 2024, according to President-elect Trump, Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren and the rest of her January 6th committee members all belong in jail. So we are asking the Congresswoman herself if she's feeling worried or intimidated about the threat of imprisonment. Then the president-elect put forward a national investment policy of sorts, spending $1 billion in the U.S. to open a new business or manufacturing plant, and Trump would then waive all of those pesky regulations. We'll try, emphasize the word try, to make some sense of that. But first this.
FBI Director Christopher Wray, who was appointed by Donald Trump during his first term as president back in 2017 after Trump fired James Comey, is reportedly planning his resignation. Wray said in a statement today that he is intending to resign in January at the end of Joe Biden's term, saying his goal in resigning was to keep the FBI, quote, above the fray of politics. Of course, Trump has said he intends to nominate loyalist Kash Patel to head the bureau. If Wray does indeed resign, he will save Trump from having to fire him. There have only been two FBI directors ever fired in the history of the Bureau.
Now, a bit of palace intrigue was involved in the latest Trump administration appointees. Kimberly Guilfoyle, the former Fox News host who was engaged for a time to Donald Trump Jr., was named by the president-elect as the next U.S. ambassador to Greece. The announcement came at the same time that Trump Jr. went official with his new girlfriend, a Palm Beach heiress. Now, Trump Jr. tweeted after Guilfoyle's ambassadorship was announced that he was so proud of Kimberly. He said she loves America and she always has wanted to serve the country as an ambassador.
While there has been a lot of attention on Trump's more controversial administration appointments like Pete Hegseth, Matt Gaetz, Tulsi Gabbard, and Kash Patel, another nominee is running into possible confirmation trouble. Several Republican senators have expressed some reservations about approving Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as the Secretary of Health and Human Services. Texas Republican Senator John Cornyn said he needs clarifications on Kennedy's vaccine conspiracy theories, while Senator Bill Cassidy from Louisiana, who is a medical doctor, said he has some problems with Kennedy's attacks on the medical profession.
Donald Trump doesn't have particularly fond feelings for the members of Congress who took part in the special committee investigating the January 6th insurrection.
And Cheney was behind it, well, and so was Benny Thompson and everybody on that committee.
We're going to
for what they did.
Yeah.
Honestly, they should go to jail.
So you think Liz Cheney should go to jail?
For what
everyone
they did?
Everyone on the committee, you think?
I think everybody
on the
anybody that voted in favor.
Are you going to direct your FBI director and your attorney general to send them to jail?
No, not at all. I think that they'll have to look at that.
Democratic Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren, representing the San Jose area, was a member of that committee and joins us now on Countdown 2024. Congresswoman, thanks for being with us. Are you packing your toothbrush?
No, I'm not. I don't know that the incoming president has ever read the Constitution. If he did, he would see that Article 1, Section 6 contains the speech or debate clause that really provides that members of Congress, House and Senate, are immune from, it's the only immunity provision in the entire Constitution, from being questioned about their legislative activity. The committee did a good job. We were assigned the task of uncovering what happened leading up to the January 6th riot. We discovered a wide-ranging plot with Mr. Trump at the center of it. And when all his other efforts to overturn the election failed, he summoned a mob to Washington, knowing they were armed, sent them down to the Capitol to stop the counting of the Electoral College votes. You know, it may be inconvenient, that truth, for him, but it is what happened. And all of the evidence that we have compiled is over at the government printing office. Anybody can go look at it, see all the...
But let me ask you something, because I don't know whether or not Trump has read the Constitution, but he is good at intimidating people when he wants to. Are you intimidated in any way?
No. I mean, he's trying to intimidate the members of the committee, but we are not intimidated. We were assigned a legislative task. We accomplished that task. We worked hard and we uncovered the evidence and we filed our report as required under the rule governing our establishment. So no, we did everything that we were asked to do. We did it as well as we could. And there is no wrongdoing here. It's the wrongdoing is actually, if anything, on his part, trying to overturn the Constitution. So the idea that he didn't instruct his, assuming that Kash Patel actually is confirmed and Ms. Bondi, in kind of mob boss fashion, he's saying what he wants to have happen. He doesn't need to direct them. But since they're both lawyers, they're going to see quite quickly there's no way to implement his desire to wreak revenge on those who uncovered his unsavory role in the riot.
You know, you have called his suggestion, right, Trump's suggestion to that the Justice Department should investigate and or jail yourself and other members of that committee, not only unconstitutional, but dangerous and something that should be laughed at by any legitimate lawyer. Like if you could like crawl into Trump's head, like what kind of charges could even be brought against any of you?
I have no idea. You know, he has repeated the false claim that somehow we hid evidence. That's just bologna sandwich. Everything we've got is over at the government printing office. I would invite any of your listeners to go there and look at the transcripts, look at the emails, listen to the radio traffic. It's all there. And if people are online wanting to look at things, they should go to the Department of Justice and take a look at the case files of the rioters who've been convicted of very serious assaults against the Capitol Police, where they attacked the police with weapons, they sprayed chemicals, they tased officers, they gouged out an eye, they maimed people's hands. Certain officers were so badly injured they had to retire from the force. Those are the people he's talking about pardoning.
Right. We're talking with Democratic Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren, who represents the San Jose area. There is another way, though, Congresswoman, that Trump, if he wants to, can intimidate you and other members of that committee. For example, do you intend to run again?
Well, I make that decision every year.
Okay, but you might. And Elon Musk, I believe, has indicated that he is willing to throw his considerable financial wealth in primaries directed against those who oppose the Trump administration and what Trump wants to do. That is another way to intimidate you. Would that bother you?
They already did that. They recruited a Democratic candidate. Roger Stone sent out mailers. There was undisclosed money and various slanderous lies that were made. And I was selected by my constituents to run again. So I'm not going to be intimidated by a bunch of bullies. Really, this is ridiculous.
You know, you were talking about President-elect Trump and him wanting to pardon those who were involved in the January 6th attack on the Capitol. There's also been talk about President Biden issuing preemptive pardons for members of the January 6th committee. Do you have any interest in that?
I'm not asking for that, but it's up to the president to decide what he thinks is prudent.
I am curious, do you and other members of the committee, do you discuss amongst yourselves all of this bluster from Trump and those who are his most devoted followers?
We keep in touch with each other. I'll tell you, serving on the January 6th committee was an intense experience. Mm-hmm. You know, every single day we worked. We stayed here weekends to get the job done. I mean, we really got to know each other, and we keep in touch. None of the members, you know, several of our members are no longer members of Congress. Nobody is feeling intimidated by this bluster.
What about other Republican members, other Republican colleagues? I mean, do you hear from them? What are you hearing from them, if anything at all, about when Trump says stuff like this, suggesting that, you know, Congress members should be jailed who are involved in this committee?
Well, the private conversations I have with members of Congress, including Republicans, and I have plenty of friends in the House Republican Conference, none of them think this is, serious. And many of them, although they might not say so publicly, think he's pretty much a joke.
But this kind of talk, doesn't it really lead to more disenchantment on the part of the public with government and government officials? And it casts doubt on what government officials of all stripes are doing?
Well, I don't know about that, but certainly Mr. Trump's specialty is trying to trash the government and trash the Constitution and the rule of law. So this is right in keeping with that agenda that he has.
So, you know, you said that you have these private conversations, right, with some of these members that you are friends with, also Republican colleagues.
Sure.
And you said that some of them think he's a joke. Why don't they come out and just say it to the public?
Well, I'm not going to speak for them.
Yeah.
But obviously, the Republican voters are most of them quite enthused about Mr. Trump. And that's also the constituents that my Republican colleagues answer to. So that could be part of the answer.
All right, Congresswoman Zoe Lofgren, thank you so much for your time.
Sure. Anytime. Take care.
Donald Trump says that if you invest $1 billion or more in the United States, you should be allowed to avoid onerous regulations and permits. We are unpacking that next.
It's Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM. This is Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM.
Welcome back to the show. Along with Charles Feldman, I'm Margaret Carrero. Here is the post by the president-elect Donald Trump, verbatim on his Truth Social that inspired our next segment. Any person or company investing $1 billion or more in the United States of America will receive fully expedited approvals and permits, including, but in no way limited to, all environmental approvals. Get ready to rock. The messages seem to be that America is open for business, but let's not forget that Trump ran into several problems with this kind of approach in his first term.
Yeah, there's the infamous Foxconn example. That was a Taiwanese electronics firm that Trump said was going to invest $10 billion by building a new manufacturing plant in Wisconsin, which ultimately never happened. Ben Berkowitz is the managing business editor at Axios. He wrote about all of this, joins us now on Countdown 2024. How are you doing, Ben?
Doing well, thanks. Good to be with you both this afternoon.
So can you explain briefly so that anyone, including maybe Mr. Trump, can understand what he actually said?
It's a very good question. And at this point, it's really open to interpretation. Essentially, what he said was, invest $1 billion in America and somehow the regulatory morass will be cleared away and you will get whatever permits, approvals, etc. you need immediately, without really explaining how that would happen.
I was going to say, can he do that?
It's sort of an open question what he can or can't do. The problem being that, as your listeners will be well aware, the government has a whole lot of regulations for a whole lot of things. And there are lots of government agencies that regulate different things simultaneously. And so it's not really clear that there is any sort of magic wand that he or anyone else can wave to dispense with every regulation that would be relevant for any project to let an entrepreneur just sort of roll in and do what they like for the right price.
I mean, certainly for the environmentalists, I mean, they're just already up in arms, groups calling President-elect Trump's proposal illegal and on its face a clear violation of the National Environmental Policy Act. I mean, do you see the potential of maybe some lawsuits from environmental groups if he tries to make this happen?
It seems a fair assumption that there will be people, to your point, who sort of take steps to try to counter it immediately. Again, because there's no real clarity here on precisely how this would work. We reached out to the transition team and we asked, for example, is there going to be a whole of government coordinator who runs this effort and makes this happen? And we got no response. So it's still kind of an open question, but I think it's very fair to assume that a lot of people are looking at that act and looking at other regulations and saying, wait a second, things are done here this way for a reason.
Well, presidents, of course, do have a certain degree of latitude in many different areas. Is there any history, as far as you know, of this sort of thing in any way, shape, or form being done by other administrations?
There's a history of presidents using the power of the office to try to expedite reviews and expediting some that are directly under their authority, and of course using their sort of suasion with Congress to try to move along regulations and changes in regulations to expedite this. But this notion of a blanket guarantee that if you spend X, all obstacles will be dispensed and you will get whatever you need and you can build immediately, that's basically without precedent as far as anyone knows.
Does a policy that prioritizes $1 billion or more in economic investments risk shutting out small businesses who are, I would imagine, also eager to get out from underneath the regulations?
It's a great question, and it's kind of an open question who the beneficiaries are here. One of the questions we asked, and again didn't get answered, was, is this limited to domestic investors? Is it foreign investors only? Because you could read what he wrote to imply that it's only for foreign direct investment in the country. The $1 billion also seems to be a threshold that isn't necessarily tied to anything. It's just a big round number. So there are probably plenty of people who will look at this and say, I'd like to do this too. Why is it $1 billion? Why can't it be, for example, $100 million? So that will inevitably, I think, come up in the conversations around this.
Ben Berkowitz is who we are speaking with, managing business editor at Axios. We will continue our conversation. The idea of, is America open for business under Donald Trump? Environmental consequences be damned. More on that next.
This is Countdown 2024
on KNX News 97.1 FM.
And welcome back to the Wednesday edition of Countdown 2024, along with Margaret Carrero. I'm Charles Feldman.
Axios business editor Ben Berkowitz remains with us to finish off our discussion of the Trump economic approach.
Ben, is there such a problem of getting other countries? And let's presume that for the sake of discussion, that Trump's posting refers to foreigners investing in the U.S. I thought the U.S. was a place a lot of people wanted to invest in. No?
Absolutely right. Foreign direct investment is a huge component of the economy, although what folks may not realize is that it actually has been very slightly declining. So in 2022, foreign direct investment was about $177 billion, which is actually down a bit from the year prior. There is an appetite for it, but particularly for an administration that's heavily focused on trade deficits, one of the levers that they're trying to pull or intend to pull to bring those deficits down is to get foreign countries to invest more in the U.S. And this may be an avenue for that, as uncertain as it is so far.
As uncertain as it is, as muddled as it may be, does Trump, though, have a point that there are simply too many federal, state, and local regulations that are placed on people and companies that are looking to start and expand businesses here?
I think anybody who's ever tried to build anything in California would say that it'd be nice if there was less regulation. And I think that probably goes in a lot of the country, too. Certainly that's going to be a focus of his administration. You've seen DOGE, the Elon Musk, Vivek Ramaswamy effort to streamline government. Across the board, his appointments have all talked about reducing regulation, reducing burden. It is a buzzword for the administration, but it is also very much an intent for the administration. So this, in that sense, fits in with the sort of Trump 2.0 goal of reducing government burdens, reducing regulation, and theoretically expediting business in this country.
Axios business editor Ben Berkowitz, thank you so much for joining us today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
On Thursdays, that's tomorrow, in case you've lost track, Countdown 2024 The FBI and the identity of the person leading America's top police agency is quickly becoming a flashpoint for the upcoming second Trump term. Can the FBI manage to stay above the political fray? Again, that's tomorrow's show. If you missed the show, by the way, catch up on demand on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. All you have to do is search Countdown 2024 and follow the show.